We all know how many groups there are around the place. And I recently investigated, you know, went to the Divine Light. And I wonder, your experience may be able to throw some light on the Divine Light.
Who?
In that this, I mean, each organisation claims to sort of give the devotee enlightenment, but in this particular case, it actually seems to work. It actually seems to work. I mean, you can see people can go to a Catholic church or be a Jew of any religion and follow it for year after year, and there's just no difference at the end of 20 years except age. And but in there, after a period, which can be any length, not usually more than 6 or 7 months at the very most, more likely 3 or 4.
That's faster than making a baby.
Yes. Well, yes, any analogy you do. And you can see, after initiation, you can see a profound change in them. Now, have you helped us to understand what that change is? Because, as I said, some organisations you see an odd person. An odd person might change, apparently, or something. But in this case, it's almost 100%. Could we look at... Thank you very much. Yeah, thank
you. Except in summer, the vest is always worn on the inside, yes? So it's, investigation is easier in summer than in winter. The vest, you have a vest there inside the shirt? That's it. That is... So investigation means wearing the vest inside a shirt. What is change? What changes? Is the question. So, the investigation has, if it is investigation and not merely wearing a vest inside a shirt, should pursue along the right track, flow along the right track, and ask the right questions. There are questions which are appropriate, there are questions which are inappropriate. A change may happen in the dress, for instance, and sometimes the change in dress could be dramatic. The change could happen in a hairstyle, and that could also be dramatic. Imagine that girl suddenly shaving her head or hair and then appearing skinhead. And the change could be impressive. Impressive in the sense that you are willing to be impressed by something which you see. If I said that you have an impressive figure, it may mean that you have an extraordinary figure, personality, or that I am easily impressed, I am very impressionable. So what is change? What sort of change do we want to bring about? And what changes into what? You might say that this person was very mean, very vulgar, and very rude, and very selfish, and egotistic, and so on, before he joined this group or community or whatever it is. And now he has become very mellow and is very sweet and charming and always smiling and very helpful. Is that what you want?
No.
These changes being?
I'm asking.
These changes being superficial. Something that is put on like a vest. And The important factor here is, I had some hair once upon a time. I changed the hairstyle, shaved it off. And I can change it back into a hairy head, so long as, thank God, I don't go and get bald naturally. And I can change it back tomorrow morning, I can take all the hair off. Or I can let it grow again, it will take another 6 months to get a full head of hair. Is that what we want? Is that sort of change what we want? Or what is a change and how does it happen? A change from a bad guy to a good guy. And is that the sign or symptom of enlightenment? As you are mentioning, people becoming enlightened after joining an organization, I thought at least they must become enlightened in one way. Your purse is emptied and so that should be way much less. That's a very good thing too. You've been carrying such a lot of weight around you. And so they usually make you travel lighter afterwards. It's a very good thing. So, what is enlightenment? And does enlightenment imply a change? A change which is noticeable by other people and which is impressive. What is enlightenment? Does enlightenment mean a visible change?
Yes. Actually, we don't really seem to be... The change we're speaking about is the claim, which seems to be as honest as any other claim I've ever seen.
Thank you very much. I think you have already given yourself away. A claim which is as honest as any other claim is a self-defeating statement. Anybody can claim anything. So, one can claim to be enlightened. Very nice, very consoling, satisfying, self-satisfying. Which is a good thing. Is that what we want? A self-satisfying experience. Now, only about 20 of us are here. And we seek some sort of an enlightenment experience which is self-satisfying. Why don't those people in those houses in the neighborhood, why don't they come? Because they have found self-satisfaction in other areas by doing other things. Some people find tremendous satisfaction sitting and watching television. Some people find tremendous satisfaction playing some game or watching others play games. Some people find tremendous satisfaction just having a few drinks and sitting relaxed or walking along the beach. So, self-satisfaction is available everywhere in the world. Is that what we want? Thank you.
There is a subtle thing. You see, once self has sort of followed certain things and found a very subtle difference between this thing that we're talking about, this enlightenment, and one's own, the concept oneself may have followed, and it's a subtle difference, and this seems convincing, but it doesn't seem to be what one's looking for, which
Neither change, which is perceptible, however impressive it may be, nor a sense of self-satisfaction is a necessary symptom of enlightenment. Then what is enlightenment? We are still pursuing this question. What is enlightenment? If it is not change, however much it may be for the better, and if it is not a mere matter of self-satisfaction. Because in both these cases, what changes from one to the other can return to the one. If I change from a hairy head to a shaven head, it can return to the hairy head again, or it can return to the shaven head again. This, the pendulum can swing from one to the other. For instance, a person is very selfish, very mean. Let's take a simple example, very greedy, grabbing, mean, selfish. And then suddenly he comes into contact with a very great yogi. And a tremendous change takes place immediately. He is no longer selfish, she is giving and he is working hard and so on, so on, so on. Because he has found his guru, he is the master, and I am going to surrender myself to him and I get enlightened and I am going to be enlightened. Very good. And the master also sees that you are very close to enlightenment and makes you even lighter. Which is a nice thing. Then you are struggling to get closer and closer to this great master. Lo and behold, all those qualities have come back in droves. But at this time, you do not call them meanness. You do not call them greed, you do not call them anything, but you call them for the sake of the Lord. Why are you robbing other people? For the sake of the Lord. Why are you bluffing other people? For the sake of the Lord. For the sake of the Lord's work, we need more. For the sake of the Lord's work, we need even a softer carpet, thicker carpet. For the sake of the Lord's work, same thing. What has changed there?
The focus.
Thank you. We don't have need to say that aloud. We don't need. What is enlightenment? Here, you're saying that a few minutes ago, yeah? The master says, surrender your ego to me and I'll give you enlightenment. Fantastic. And you tell the master, there's a beautiful expression in Sanskrit and also in Hindi, tan man dhan, all three are yours. Tan means body, man means mind, dhan means my wealth. All three are you, I dedicate, surrender myself to you, totally. My body, my mind, and my wealth are all yours. It needs... I've changed my mind. I wanted to say it needs an intelligent mind to realize that this is already hypocrisy. But I don't think... a great amount of intelligence is needed to know that now, by doing this, I am trying to grab the teacher, the master, the guru, and make myself the most important person in his entourage. I am a lonely beggar. By doing this trick, by surrendering myself to this master, I am going to become the chief disciple of this great master. Where is surrender? What surrender? What kind of surrender is that? Then you do exactly the same thing in a much larger scale. Having surrendered yourself to the master, you are going to say, as his representative, as his agent, as his manager, I own this whole lot. Not me. Nothing is for me. It's all for him. Nonsense. If that was so easy, everybody would have got enlightened. If you go to many of these big companies whose directors are all millionaires, they have nothing. They are working day and night much harder than you and I do for the sake of the company, and the company exists for the sake of the country and the humanity and all the rest of it. It's all humbug. Pure humbug. It's possible to argue that they don't know, which I very much doubt and question. It must be easy to know that it is the same old deadly ego working again, and the ego cannot be surrendered till it is known to be this it is. And till the ego is really and truly discovered and surrendered to the Guru, there is no surrender. All the rest is mere exploitation. What happens if someday the master or somebody to whom you have surrendered yourself turns around and says, "Ah, get out." I've seen those such things happen. Then there is bitterness, terrible disappointment, murder. Anything becomes possible then. Without the complete and total surrender of the ego, as you said, no enlightenment is possible. And the total surrender of the ego is not possible without coming directly face to face with the ego and knowing that this is the ego. In order to arrive at that point, something which is other than the ego must have been awakened to observe this. That is investigation. Is that possible? Then you have enlightenment. At that point, it is possible for a profound change to take place. Not a superficial change, which is that I was mean last week, and now that I have joined your club and received enlightenment, I am no longer mean for my own sake. I mean for the sake of the Guru. Something else, for God's sake. Some tremendous, profound change might be effected, radical change, which may not even be seen by others, which may not even impress others. That's not your problem at all, to impress others. The change that is impressive is another vest put on by the same ego to impress others. Here you don't want to impress anybody. In that change, the ego is seen to be non-existent, and therefore it is surrendered. It's a beautiful, a puzzling statement which these ears themselves don't understand clearly. When that intelligence discovers the non-existence of the ego, and the ego is surrendered. Isn't it? When that happens, then of course, that which valued something in this world and therefore was greedy finds no value in the things of this world, and therefore there is no greed. You see the difference between that, the other type of change, and this type of change? There it changes from there to here, pendulum, swinging. Here, there is no such swinging. You have seen that the ego is not there anymore. Something, not I have seen, something has seen that there is no ego anymore. And therefore all those things that the ego valued and therefore grabbed and possessed, craved, feared, all those seem to be no longer of such value. There is no grabbing because there is no ego to grab. There is no fear because there is no ego to be afraid of, to fear. There is no hate because there is no ego to hate. That enlightenment and that change is something very, very different. And there is, listen very carefully, there is no satisfaction because there is no craving. Or there is satisfaction because there is no craving. You can put it any way you like. You understand me?
Oh, yes. The opposites have gone into dissolution.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Here, not out there.
Not out there. And for all practical purposes, you may be leading exactly the same life that you have been leading, say, years, for years and years and years. But something has happened. Sometimes somebody might notice it, sometimes nobody might notice it. Many of the great I am not making this statement. There is a Swami called Swami Vivekananda in India. He once made this remark that the greatest amongst the enlightened people have passed unnoticed. Nobody has seen them. The saints who are known, said Swami Vivekananda, are second class saints. He included even his own guru in that. Everyone who is known are only second-class saints, who have made themselves known. The others, they didn't bother. They have been called madmen, they have been called lunatics, they have been called goblins and crazy people. They have never bothered. They have never even bothered to assume a name. If you travel in India, even now, you might hear stories of Fremantle Baba, Perth Baba, Adelaide Baba. They have no name. Some funny enlightened man stays on the garbage dump. And lives there and passes off. And then some people here and there have experienced some miraculous transformation within themselves. These are all transformations of the first type. You know, you get some kick out of something, and then you bounce up, then you come back the third, hip bone broken, that sort of thing. And they want to publicize this person is gone already, and call them some kind of Baba, and that's all. How to call them? So it is Fremantle Baba. This man's name becomes Fremantle Baba. There are quite a number of them in India now. They are often posthumously recognized by people who want to exploit the name, that's all. They have never bothered to reveal themselves, or they have never bothered to expose themselves. Exhibitionist. So, one cannot even recognize such saints, enlightened people. And of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is an injunction, it's almost a commandment. Sakta karman nabidvamso yatha kurvanti bharata kuryat vidvan tatha asaktas chikivshur loka sangra. It's quite possible you are enlightened. And you may be sitting there in one kind of dress, what they call business suit. And you may be enlightened for all that anyone knows. And you may be carrying on the same profession as you have been doing for the past 30 years without any change whatsoever. But you may be enlightened. Enlightenment, therefore, does not demand a dramatic change, though it may happen. We are not saying that therefore one should continue one's old vicious habits. Whatever happens from there on happens. You are not responsible for any of these. There is no ego to calculate and determine that I am going to smile hereafter because I am enlightened, or I am going to frown hereafter because I am enlightened. What happens, happens. I have lived with some enlightened beings, and once you get close to them, you realize that all our strange ideas of enlightenment and post-enlightenment behavior are very much our own, they have nothing to do with the truth. My dear, there may be change, there may not be change. If there is change, you don't know that there has been a change. Any change you are aware of is perhaps cancer. That's the change which notice suddenly, huh? Yes, madam.
Would it be possible for an enlightened person, and I'm thinking now of a certain leader, to be the owner of very expensive motor cars in large numbers? And
what is an expensive motor car to an enlightened person? What is an expensive motor car to an enlightened person?
Well, then, it doesn't matter whether he doesn't have to live a life of sort of moderation.
He doesn't have to anything. There is no have to in his case.
To me, it's probably not.
Exactly. To me. To me is the problem. When there is no me in that person, it matters little. I'm not saying that therefore he is enlightened.
No.
Hollywood is full of expensive motor cars and expensive makeup kits and so on. They are not enlightened.
I'm thinking of this particular person, which shall be nameless, who is a religious leader, not a Christian leader, but, and who has...
Well, Christian leaders are also riding expensive cars. So, it's no problem.
And the big fiddles go on too. But this particular one is a very large, fat young man.
Why not?
Should people off his teaching? Why not?
That's it. That's up to you. If you want to follow him, follow him. If you don't want to follow him, don't follow him. But whether he drives an expensive car or jumps onto a rubbish heap and throws off all his clothes, that these things don't matter at all in the case of the enlightened person. But I must repeat this so that I don't give a wrong impression. It does not mean, therefore, that either the one who drives expensive cars or the one that sits naked on a rubbish heap is necessarily enlightened. These things have nothing whatsoever to do. They are irrelevant considerations. Enlightenment is enlightenment, and it is absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with your exhibitionism. Whether it is sitting naked on a rubbish heap or driving an expensive car. It has nothing to do with it.
Is it just our conditioning then?
Conditioning that says that he must be like this and the other person must be something else.
That says.
And it is because you say that film stars and millionaires must have expensive cars, they go on buying these. Otherwise, I don't think they are very happy with those cars either. They probably drive some smaller cars, more useful stuff. But because you look up to them and you fix the public, fixes a sort of thou shalt and thou shalt not. If you are a millionaire, you must be dressed in such and such style, and you must live in such and such a house, and you must live, you must ride, drive such and such cars, and then therefore they follow you.
If he has enough taste, he might have trouble.
Exactly.
Sitting on the front.
Yeah.
But then you get this fear of poverty and great austerity and all that sort of thing, which will link with...
Exactly. Well. The other extreme.
Mm.
So, when some of us sit down in a gathering and criticize such people and exalt the naked monk sitting on a rubbish heap, then all of us make a beeline for the rubbish heap and throw off our clothes so that you may appreciate us. You see, again, it's the exhibitionism that is objectionable here, which shows that the person is not enlightened.
The ego is still playing it.
Exactly.
It seems to me, it's like, from our observation, that if you say in oneself, if one needs acclamation, the same problem is existing.
Same problem.
Existed.
And therefore, enlightenment does not concern itself with what someone else does. Sure. Or how far enlightened or non-enlightened the other person is. I don't care. It's of no use to me. What have I done for this enlightenment? Am I enlightened or not? If not, why not? That's the main problem. It's not other people's problem. We can never solve other people's problems. We can never even understand other people's problems. I'm not enlightened. If I can be aware that I'm not enlightened, and pursue that awareness. What does enlightenment mean? Or what it is that feels unenlightened? I don't know if you appreciate the big snag here. In order to be aware that I am unaware of the Godhead in me, let's say. Use a simple word. In order to be aware that I am unaware of the Godhead in me, there must be an awareness that is aware of the Godhead and that is also aware of something which is not aware of the Godhead. What is that? What is this mystery? That I am aware, that I am unaware. Am I awareness or am I unawareness? Are there two eyes, one aware and the one unaware? The higher self and the lower self. If there is a higher self, can I jump onto the roof and maybe I find it there? What is higher self? What is lower self? What is all this? Then, probably what Valda called our conditioning makes us feel that which brings about loving kindness, compassion, sweetness of behavior, love, and so on. That is the higher self. It's our own conditioning that does this. And that which brings about meanness, greediness, and anger, hate, and all this. This is the lower self. We are investigating ourselves. We are not investigating somebody else. Okay. Then you say, let me eliminate all the lower self. And you systematically eliminate all that is lower self, which is greed, and lust, anger, greed, and vanity, meanness, jealousy, hate. All these go one by one, one by one. There's a change. Now, hello, my dear. I don't hate anymore. I'm not jealous of anything anymore. Hi, nice to see you. And won't you have a glass of water? I'm being very generous. I'm aware that I am growing in all these higher self qualities. I'm much better than her. I used to be much worse once upon a time. Now I'm much better than her. Who? My God. His vanity is growing. And if this vanity is allowed to grow unchecked, then all those other things are going to come back sooner or later. So I realize that even this higher self is but self. Whether I love or whether I hate, it is still swinging from one to the other, one self to the other self. Self is self. What is higher self and lower self? But it is quite possible that if the lower self has been subdued and the higher self, or the good qualities or the nice changes that you have been talking about, have been brought about, there is greater calmness, there is little less restlessness, which enables you to observe a little more closely yourself. What is all this game? And who plays this? What is the self I am talking about, I am thinking about? Once you go along that, I don't want you to trip on this, my friend. Once you go along that track, then it is possible that suddenly you might discover that which was aware, that I am not aware of the self, was itself the self, Godhead. That awareness itself was both the beginning and the end. Zero as well as 360 degrees. That's where we started, and that's where we conclude. Then Life goes on. Life goes on.